man with the game information. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Giving the news to the nerd generation. Gaming Steve. Give me news.
Give me news.
Give me views.
Give me views.
Gaming Steve.
Gaming Steve. He got the game.
What's to see?
What to see?
What to mean?
What to mean?
Gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who went out with Zelda and then dumped her, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion, and in this week's show, I will be talking about 2010's E3. So, welcome to Gaming Steve. For those of you who have never listened to me, welcome, and I'll tell you a little bit about the show. And for those of you who've listened to me on and off for the last 5 years or so, actually it's been 5.5 years, welcome back. I apologize that I've not done one of these in about 2.5 years. There are various reasons for that, but I'll probably save that for another podcast. I'm going to try to be upbeat and happy and just talk about E3 and not about why I kind of stopped doing these for a while. But let's get right into E3, shall we? Actually, right before I get into E3, I just wanted to quickly introduce myself to those of you who have not listened to this before or are new to this, or for those of you who listened to me back in the day and kind of forgot who the heck the Steve guy was. So for those of you who don't remember, I've been doing video game development since, well, actually the 80s with the Apple II Plus. I used to do game development, some games called Mall Maniacs and a few others. And then from there, actually in the 90s, did quite a bit of, well, I guess it's a dirty word, but we call it casual game development back then. I don't know what you would call it now, because it's not really casual gaming anymore. I guess you call it Facebook-type gaming, but mostly things for Disney Online and Nickelodeon, Harry Potter for Scholastic, things like that, to more eccentric games like Sportsman of the Year for Sports Illustrated. I did Tiger Woods games, things like that. Recently, I've actually been continuing to do that type of work, and actually I'm doing a very cool game for Wall Street Journal, if you can even look it up. It's the virtual stock exchange, and if you look at it, you'll see it looks like utter crap. It has not been updated in 10 years, and I've been hired to redo the whole game. It's a pretty interesting thing. It teaches you how stocks work, and it's used mostly for kids in schools, and it's also being used in colleges as well. And there's going to be a big relaunch of the game in around October during earnings season. So that's the type of stuff I continuously do now. Since I've been doing this for so long, I have a lot of friends in the industry. I have a lot of friends that that have been in the industry for a long time, that are very high up, that have been doing this 10, 15 plus years. So at E3, it's very fun. I get to come, I get to talk to them, I get to see them, talk to them about what's going on in the industry, visit them, catch up, etc., etc. And, well, with that, now that you know who the heck I am, let's jump right into E3 and what I thought about it so far. And this is one of the weirdest E3s. I've been going to them for about, I can't remember, it's like 13 years or so, 12, 13 years since the Atlanta days. I've kind of lost track at this point. And this one is, in a strange way, and I've never used this word to describe E3 ever before in my life, it's been boring. That I never said before, but it actually is quite a boring E3. I'm not exactly sure why it's so boring. It's something to do with just the games really aren't that interesting. It seems like all the really interesting and unique games that we'd probably be interested in seeing, like Portal 2, or just something that you just sort of breaks the mold and it's kind of cool, they're not being shown on the floor. Because I guess they, you know, they're in a weird way, they're kind of showing the more mundane games, almost the games that wouldn't be getting pressed, they're trying to show you. And then the games that will get pressed and the games that people will automatically talk about, they're being kept behind the scenes. And I've never really seen that happen before. The only one who's not really doing this is the Nintendo booth. There is no Activision booth. They usually do that too. They're usually pretty good about putting all their games forward. But EA's booth's pretty boring. the Microsoft booth, the Kinect demos are gargantuan, so they take up almost the whole booth, and they really don't have a lot of room for anything else. The Ubisoft booth, of course, is has Assassin's Creed everywhere on it, so, and, you know, getting a little bored of Assassin's Creed, and just in general, it just seems like kind of an odd show. And something else that's that I found kind of depressing is that in the old days, you'd go to E3 and there'd be tons of PC games there. And by nature, the PC games are usually a little more fascinating, a little more complex, a little more interesting. And I counted only one PC game that I saw, except if you go like all the way in the corners of the dregs of like these developers you've never heard of from like, you know, Southeast Asia that are desperately trying to sell anything to anyone here. There was only really one PC game that I saw, and that was it. Even the PC, even the Sony online booth, which is PC games, even those, like when they're showing like the DC MMO, like that they're showing on a PlayStation 3. So it's like, what the heck? It's in the PC game. So besides that, it being kind of a boring E3, I figured the best thing I would do is to go through each of the main three and talk about what I thought of each of them. And we'll go through Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, of course. So I guess I'll go in kind of in the order. I don't know what order I'm going to go in. I'm going to go from Microsoft first, since that's on the top of my head. So for those of you who are following my tweets, I was saying about how I was following this conference, and I was really impressed. I actually thought the Kinect, which is not, it's not a bad name, but the way they spell it makes me look at it, and it, there's a disconnect, do you get it, between the name and like the way it looks, at least in my mind. I actually thought it was really impressive. I thought it was a good idea. Not even so much for a game, though. You see, in my mind, I look at that and I think, wow, this is really going to be useful for businesses and for medical establishments and for, well, just about everyone else except for gamers. It actually seems pretty cool. As a game device, I find it kind of, well, stupid, quite frankly. I mean, you know, now you're using your whole body. And yeah, I guess I can see some applications to it, especially for fitness games and such. But, you know, it's kind of limited in a lot of ways. But then afterwards, I saw it actually on the floor. And there's a huge time delay, and a noticeable time delay between using it and having it on the screen, which is a huge problem. And then the thing that really broke my trust between myself and Microsoft forever is, and they've done this time and time again, is that they fake the demos. And if you look, there's a lot of videos online showing that the Microsoft press conference, a lot of those demos appear to be faked, and that they were just, quote, actors going through the motions that were very highly coordinated to actually work with the Kinect. So for something that's coming out this year, why did they do that? The worst example is that the Star Wars example. There's even, I saw some little animated avatars that people are making of showing that the thing animating before the guy was. Now, again, I'm sure the Kinect works because it's on the floor and it does work. But why did they bother doing that? Why, you know, it bothers me that they had to go through this masquerade of making the Kinect, which is their big showcase for this year's E3, actually, you know, not really work. And in this day and age of everything being broadcast and the internet, you didn't think we would have figured this out. You wouldn't think. I mean, I guess they didn't, or they didn't care, because it's quite obvious. And then the other item was that their whole thing with the Cirque du Soleil, I mean, even that was weird. It just had a very weird vibe overall, so that they just don't seem to concentrate on the games themselves. They're concentrating on, well, a circus. They're trying to, like, show us this fancy show of things. And, and the new Xbox 360, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I've heard, you know, they don't manufacture it anymore, which is smart because the Xbox 360 was costing them a ridiculous amount of money in repairs, and that it was completely redesigned and actually done by a true hardware company as opposed to them. Because I don't know if you know this, but Microsoft is not a hardware company. They are actually really a marketing company at this point. They only really make money on two things, and that's Windows and Office, and that's kind of it. And every other division make sometimes money, but really they don't really make much on anything else besides that at patents they keep trying to make. So, you know, overall I just was kind of disappointed with Microsoft the more I actually got to see the Kinect being used. Now, with that being said, and for those of you who haven't heard me in a long time, there's the first time I said that, because I usually say that 20 times an episode. Well, with that being said, the kid games were impressive in some senses. You know, it would be cool to be able to have, you know, your 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 year old kid using these games, because they don't actually have to, you know, use a controller, and that they can talk to the screen. But again, I'm now reserving, after what I saw Microsoft do, I am completely reserving judgment, because I can no longer trust them until I see these games in action in front of my own computer, or my own console, in front of my own TV, and to see how they actually work. And also, how much is this thing going to cost? I mean, you know, they're probably going to want to charge $150 for this thing. And I'm thinking, why am I, you know, it's like, is it going to come with a game? Maybe. So am I really going to spend $200 for this thing? You know, I mean, yeah, sure, I will, but will the average person? And the answer is probably no. I mean, they're not going to sell this thing like hotcakes. They'll sell it to a limited audience. And, you know, hardware peripherals are hard to sell. I mean, look at the iToy. Look at pretty much any hardware peripheral. You know, unless they're included with the game or included with the console, or, well, that's a, sort of it. Unless they're included with the game and included with the console, they really usually don't sell. So, I think the Kinect is probably a stepping stone, maybe to their next console. Maybe they're going to resell it for people for, I don't know, like DVDs and VHSs, you know what I mean, DVRs or DVD players, or, you know, any other technologies coming out, or, you know, video conferencing. You know, I could see it great as a video conferencing application, and just forget about the Xbox portion, just sell the Kinect version and just have that connect right to your internet. But, you know, as a game peripheral, I just am not as quite as excited with it. In fact, I was more excited about the navigation element of the press conference, where the guy is moving his hand around and actually pulling things from the menus. That was more exciting to me than some of the games. And now I think about it, and I'm realizing that's not necessarily a good thing. So Microsoft, overall, when I was watching the conference, and I probably gave him like maybe a B at the conference, maybe a B minus. But then after the shenanigans I found out, you know, I'm giving them like I'm giving them a D. I'm just really upset with the way they did that. So then I'm going to skip Nintendo. Let's go to Sony. So Sony, the Sony press conference reminded me, I actually saw it later because I actually went to E3 when it opened, because I wanted to get ahead of everyone and just get it over with. The Sony press conference reminded me a lot of the 2006 press conference, which everyone considers as a total debacle, and which is one of the main reasons why E3 was kind of shuttered in 2007-2008. This is because Sony had such negative reaction after the 2006 press conference, as did a few other companies, that they bitch and moaned and complained like babies that they were no longer to go to E3, and they did not want any other like outside sources, like, you know, bloggers and so forth, because back in the old days, you know, Sony was able to control all their press and really had people tell, you know, people would write what they wanted them to write. And after 2006, you know, there was a lot of negative press about the PS3, about the conference, about the lack of games, and so forth. And it felt like in that conference that they just, you know, they were the last conference, just like they were this year. I believe they were the last conference. Either they were last, I can't remember, but they did feel like they were, you know, this year they obviously were the last conference, and it felt like that they had a conference all scheduled, and then they saw Sony, so Microsoft, and they saw Nintendo, and then they threw this all together, and they like said, okay, now we have to address this, and we have to address that, and they just sort of had to play complete catch up and complete defense, and it just felt like a mishmash. It just was a very long, it was a very boring conference that showed the Sony Move, which really, yeah, it looks cool, but why am I wanting to buy this? I have a Nintendo Wii, and the people who want a Nintendo Wii can buy a Nintendo Wii. And I just don't get the Sony move. I understand why they're doing this, perhaps just as defense, I guess, so that if someone is out there and they're deciding between buying a Wii and buying a Sony PS3, they're thinking, oh, well, now they both have this moving technology, so I'm going to buy the PS3 because it has better graphics. But the whole thing is that Sony and Microsoft, which is now going to lead me to Nintendo, have lost the narrative. They originally thought in 2006 the narrative was going to be that the games are going to be in HD. Does everyone remember this? It's like they were always talking about this is the HD generation. Everything's going to look amazing. It's going to have the best 3D graphics. Everything's going to be, you know, cutting edge, beautiful, HD quality, 1080p, and that's what's going to be important. And, you know, no one was even talking about Nintendo. Nintendo was a nothing. Nintendo was being considered total garbage by everyone else. Everyone, the media, everyone. And all of a sudden, you know, Nintendo comes along, steals their thunder. It's continuously sold out for 3+ years in the United States. Still to this day is still somewhat hard to find on and off during the season. Let's see, last December was the best-selling console of all time in a single month. It sold more in December than I believe it was the 360 and the PS3 combined from January to November. The, Mario 5 is what I call it, the Super Mario Brothers Wii game is continuously in the top of the charts week after week, month after month, with no press. It just is because people like to buy it. Wii Fit has been selling nonstop. It's always in the top 10 every single month for years now. It's just continuously selling. You try to find this thing used, it is impossible. You go to Price Club, this thing is still there. People are buying it like crazy. And you know why? It's because it's the software, okay? Who would have thought in a million years that a console that is relying on much older technology, that has much more primitive graphics, that has a Wii motion controller, which quite honestly isn't even all that great until they put on the gyroscope. Finally, it actually got pretty good. It went from barely usable to now okay to semi-usable. And this thing is continuously destroying everyone else. And it is, you know, I know there's a lot of people listen to this that are big Sony fans, that are big Microsoft fans, and there's a lot of hardcore gamers out there. But you know what? I don't care who wins. Trust me, I couldn't care less. I like everyone. I have all the consoles. I am continuously playing them. In fact, one of my best friends wanted to buy a console, and he even has a 6-year-old daughter, and I recommended him to buy the PS3 because I know the type of games he likes, and he loves it. And I have two other friends, and I recommended they buy Xbox 360s because of the type of games they like. And that's what it is. It's the games. That is what this is about. It's not about the graphics. It's not even about motion control. It's about the games. And there's one thing Nintendo has that none of these other people have, and that's the games. They have a long history of games. They've been doing this a very long time. And people are buying Super Mario Brothers because they remember when they're youth, and they like that type of game. So when they see it and they come back, they want to buy that type of game. They want to play it again. And Nintendo, which brings me to the Nintendo conference, Nintendo got it. They've gotten it for a long time. A couple of years ago, they didn't quite get it when they were doing like Wii Music, which was total garbage, and they were jumping on the user-generated content market. It's kind of like Spore did, and that's a whole other topic. And the way, you know, like Little Big Planet did, and it actually looked like that might be the way to go, but it wasn't. It definitely wasn't the way. The way to go is to take old brands and old gameplay styles of just like 2D side scrollers and basic gameplay that has been solid for the last 20 years and just update it for today's audiences and re-release it. It is actually so ridiculously easy, the marketing idea, that it is actually kind of scary. The scary part is that Microsoft can't do this because they don't have history, and even Sony can't do it. There's only one other person who can do that, and that's Nintendo and Sega, and that's it. They're the only ones, and Sega's kind of gone bye-bye. So Nintendo's the only one left with the nostalgia factor, and you know what? It's working. It's working gangbusters for them. So sure enough, this was the year. They have a great conference. Sony, I give them also a D, quite frankly. The conference was, you know, I feel like when I'm looking at these conferences, I see Microsoft is sort of like current generation, and they are trying to do some new cool things, and they're definitely trying to innovate, and they're more, I'd say, interesting of the two hardcore, but they're still kind of like running in place. I feel like Microsoft is continuously, endlessly playing catch up, and then you have Nintendo, who is so far ahead of everyone else, is that they are doing an amazing job at disrupting everyone. They're doing a really good job at now creating the dialogue. They're creating the story of what this generation is about and what gaming is about now. And to the point that, if you don't believe me, it's like, look at what Nintendo and Sony did. It's like they're catching up to Microsoft. To Nintendo. I remember I would go to these GDCs and I would talk to the Microsoft execs, and they would just ignore Nintendo. They didn't even consider them competition. And now they have to. They cannot ignore the amazing force that Nintendo has become. And Nintendo is now really hitting their stride. They're very, very smart. The games they released, you know, they're showing the new Zelda game, which it looks like it's going back to its original roots of putting in a lot more puzzle elements and a lot less, you know, they definitely had some of the fighting, which is cool, and the graphics looked better, but the puzzle elements, and if it's more of a puzzle game and less of, the last couple of Zeldas have been kind of more like action RPGs than really puzzle RPGs, then they'll be a really big winner. You have Metroid, the other M, which is kind of looking like a side-scroller, which is great. You have Donkey Kong Country, which, let me think about the last time Donkey Kong Country came out. And by the way, Donkey Kong Country single-handedly made the Super Nintendo destroy every other, you know, game on the market. I can't believe it's been 16 years. I mean, if you think about it, it's been 16 years since they're coming out with one of these games. So they're coming out with that. And yeah, Kid Icarus, which when I was a kid, I used to play Kid Icarus, and I used to love the game. But that game is so ancient, I can't believe they're coming out with it. And then, you know, the Mario Party, you know, the Wii Party game looked very good. You know, people really do like those party games quite a bit. And even the Kirby game, you know, here's a game, I played it quite a bit today. You know, it's amazing. I mean, it's like, okay, yeah, it's a 2D game. It's using the Wii processor. It's not amazing, you know, blow you out of the water graphics, but it is gorgeous. I was sitting there, everyone who's walking by is just stunned by this game. They're walking by and they're like, look at that, it is incredible. You know, if you haven't seen it, it's, you know, it's like Kirby and all the characters are made out of yarn, and it's a combination. It's kind of like if they took Paper Mario, which I always liked, and brought it to the next level. Paper Mario was a real innovative game where everything was paper, and it had a weird 2-3D aspect to it. This is like the next step, and it is just a absolutely beautiful game, and it was tons of fun to play. And everyone's walking by is just astounded by this game. So they had something for everyone. The Nintendo conference truly had something for everyone. And they had GoldenEye, which again, you know, a lot of people buy just for nostalgic sake. And the other thing about their conference is everything they were showing, more or less, is coming out now. It's coming out this year. A lot of it was kept secret. It was totally under wraps. And then the final coup de grace is the Nintendo 3DS, which now marks, by the way, and I can't believe no one's even writing about this, but it's now the eighth generation console, because this is really a new console. This is, you know, it's, yes, it's a handheld, but it's the official start of the next console war, and no one's else even talking about it. It's like, I don't even know what Microsoft, it's Sony. They're so busy trying to catch up to the beginning of what Nintendo was doing in 2006 that they totally skipped out about what the 3DS is. So I sat down, I played with the 3DS, and in a word, mind-blowing. It is difficult / impossible to explain in words how good the 3D looks. It is 3D. It is not some fake 3D. It's not like, oh, it kind of looks 3D. You know, even if you went and saw Avatar, it is better than Avatar. It is 3D. It actually looks like, when you look at it, it looks like you are, there's a little cutout in the 3DS, and you look and you see inside the 3DS, and you actually look inside of it, and that there's that much depth of field. Now, the technology is actually, well, it's very complex, but it's not really that complex. I mean, all it is a screen that is somehow alternating between the left and right eye, and is doing very quickly, so it appears that it is, it's tricking your brain to make it look like it's actually 3D. It does it really, really well. Yes, if you look at it on the side, because you do have to look at it straight on, because it is alternating left and right. So if you do turn it too far, you don't see the 3D. But again, this isn't a TV. It works very well if you're holding the 3DS. The little slider is amazing. In fact, a lot of people are just sitting there moving the slider because it allows you to control the 3D. What it really does is it's actually separating out the image. If you actually look at it sort of on the top, you can see how it's working, is that as you move the slider up, it actually will separate out the image a little bit more. If you move it all the way maximum, it separates it quite a bit, and it actually has a very high depth of field. If you bring it down to, you know, less depth of field, it's a little easier in the eyes, and then you could actually see the images a little closer together. But it is true 3D without glasses. If you see this thing, you will buy it. It is just that simple. And the whole joke is they're probably going to charge $200 for this thing. They'll probably charge like $199. Meanwhile, Sony, and this is the problem with Sony, is that they are trying to, you know, they're talking about 3D. And I went to see the 3D. There was Sly Cooper, one of my favorite games of all time. First of all, the game looks totally horrible in the 3D when you're not wearing the glasses, because it's impossible to see the game. And then you put on the glasses, which, of course, who the heck wants to wear these stupid glasses while you're watching TV or playing a game? You know, a friend of mine, this just last week, a friend of mine asked me, he's like, are you going to buy one of those 3D TVs? And I said, no, of course not. Who's going to, first, there's no content for it. Second of all, who's going to sit there and watch 3D with glasses on? No one wants to do that. And then sure enough, you know, Nintendo comes out with this, and the screen's not even by Nintendo. I believe it's by Sharp. It's like, you know, something like this is going to come out, and then everyone's going to want this. And they're very smart, is that Nintendo is disrupting Sony, because Sony wants to sell 3D TVs. They want to sell you everything. They're trying to sell you the movies. They're trying to sell you the 3D TVs. They want to sell you the PS3. They want to sell you the Blu-ray. They're trying to upgrade your whole entertainment system. And Nintendo's very smart what they're doing here. So anyhow, you have the system, you know, it's a normal DS, and by now, you know, the DS, you know, I remember when the DS first came out, I sort of poo-pooed it, but, you know, they really have gotten down that technology to a science. You know, 3DS clamshell, it's gorgeous, it's really well engineered, the graphics are even better, you know, somehow they're even sharper, and then I don't even mention the best part is that if you slide it all the way down, it just sort of clicks and goes right to 2D. It actually, you can see it like click a little, and it just sort of like swaps, and it's 2D, and suddenly it's a 2DS, and it is the most beautiful 2DS screen you've ever seen. So it's like, okay, you want to play it as 2DS? It's a 2DS. You want to turn to 3DS? Poof, it's a 3DS. And the other thing is, they're taking old games, especially any games that were done, like the Castlevania games and some others, And they're very easy. I was talking to some of the developers, it's very easy to turn them into 3D games. It's because anything that was done with a 3D type engine where they have Z-axis data in there already, they can very easily make it a 3D game. And even things that aren't done that way, it's a 2D game with a side scroll where all the sprites are separate, they can just separate out the sprites, separate out the layers, and then they can just say where each one is, and voila, you have a 2D game turned into a 3D game. Very easily. So they're going to be able, you know, they can release all these great games. They can release like the Castlevania games, they can release the Metroid games, turn them into 3D. And this is the best part, is you don't even have to rebuy the games. It's that they can have it that you just download the quote 3D code from the game, maybe for a couple of bucks. So if you have the original cartridge, you can just use your original cartridge. You just get the extra data and voila, you have a 3D game. So who wouldn't want that? It's a brilliant marketing move. Something else about the 3DS is that they have a ton of developers on this thing. I was talking to some of the marketing guys. They said they have more developers working on the 3DS than they've third-party developers than they've ever had in the history of Nintendo. And it's no reason, you know, it's like there's no doubt. It's because when you see this thing firsthand, you can see the power behind it. And this is one of those things, you know, it's very smart. It's a handheld system. If your kid brings this into class and your kid brings into class and there's 30 other kids that see this thing, again, it's hard to explain. But seeing is believing. You see this thing, you're going to want to buy one. And if your kid sees it and some other kid wants to see it, they're all going to want to buy one. And there's no competition. There's nothing on the market like it. I mean, what am I going to do? Go and buy a $3,000 3D TV and then wear my glasses while I'm playing something? And then I have to buy the glasses for everyone else. And then, by the way, your glasses are not compatible with other glasses on other TVs. It's totally stupid. So I don't know when it's coming out, but it looked, you know, the hardware was finished. And that's the other thing. This is the other big difference, is that you go to the booths, you go to the Microsoft booths, like there's Kinect, but it's hard to get in and see it. It's hard to get in to play it. And when you're playing it, it feels like it looks polished and looks good, but it doesn't feel like it's completely done. The Move, actually, I'll give it credit. It is the best Wii remote I've ever used. It's really nice. It is also a Wii remote, and it is 4 years too late. And, you know, if I want to do that, I would do it on the Wii. You know, we'll probably buy one. I'll probably buy a few games for it, but I'm not going to be rearranging my entire library for the Move. You have Nintendo that is coming out with some very good games. You know, I love Donkey Kong Country. I love, Retro Studios. Two of my favorite things put together. You better believe I'm buying that game. I can't wait to play it. The new Zelda game looks real good. Actually, even all the little games, even the Kirby game looked fantastic. It was a lot of fun. And then you have the 3DS, which is unlike anything you've played or seen. Oh, and the other thing I forgot to totally mention is that during the demo, they actually took one of the 3D movies. They took a Disney 3D movie and actually showed it on the 3DS. It was unbelievable. I could watch movies on this thing. I mean, it was take like Avatar and put it on this. And the amount of pixels, for those of you who have like an iPhone or like, you know, the iPods, you know how this is that real dense pixel, you know, the dense amount of pixels where you can just feel like, you know, it's like you can't even see them. It's just a beautiful, beautiful picture that is more than 72 DPI, that it's just hundreds of DPI, and it's just like really, really packed, and it's incredibly crisp. That's what it looked like. It's just an absolutely gorgeous screen. And, man, I just hope it comes out soon, I'll tell you that much. So as you can probably tell who won the show, I think Nintendo kind of destroyed the other two guys, quite frankly. You go to the booth, the Nintendo booth is overrun, packed, lines out the wazoo to see the 3DS. Although, they're very smart the way they're handling it, is that you can wait online and you will get in. You will get in pretty quickly. They actually, even though there is a line, they're bringing in people 40 at a time or so. You go around. The demos, there's a ton of games that are being shown. Everything from, what did I see, the Kid Icarus game to Metal Gear Solid game to Resident Evil game to those movies to the Pilot Wings game to this cool sub game that I was playing. I don't even know what the heck it was, but it was actually pretty fun. Little odd controls though. You know, there's a little bit of something for everyone. And, oh, and the best one of them all, Paper Mario. One of my favorite games of all time. The Paper Mario game looked just absolutely astounding. So what did you learn? What am I learning from all this E3? I'm learning that Microsoft and Sony are probably crying right now. And those of you who are the fans of them, trust me, I'm not against them. I couldn't care less who, quote, wins or loses these things. I'm just telling you, from a business point of view, is that, you know, Microsoft is trying to solve a problem that didn't exist, which is how to control a game using your entire body. You know, I didn't know that was a problem. And yeah, it's cool. But as I said, I'm looking at it and I find it more interesting in being used as anything else other than a game. Then you have Sony, who's endlessly paying catch up and seems to have totally lost all control of their empire of gaming. And then you have Microsoft, who is really sticking to the roots, coming out with new games based on old, you know, gaming principles, which is, you know, it's working in spades for them. And then they're coming out with something completely innovative that no one's seen. Not even Apple is doing things like this. Not even Google is doing things like this. Not that Google's really a hardware company, but, you know, this is true innovation. And now it's going to start all over again. When people had the Wii, they saw the Wii and they were realizing how amazing it was to use this. And I remember that. The first time I used the Wii, that's the best analogy. The first time I used the Wii, I felt like I was in, quote, the future. You know, it was incredible. It was amazing. You know, you're sitting there with this wand and you're moving it around and you felt like it was in 3D space. When I saw the 3DS, I felt again like I was in the future. And it was something you have never seen ever before. And it is something that is totally unique. And it's one of those things you do and you will remember when you saw it for the first time. It's just astounding. I wish there's some way to show it to you. Hopefully they'll get this into stores somehow soon. Even in just demo units and just bolt this thing down, because it's the only way you can really play with it is to see it. But again, I give Nintendo credit. It's like they're letting people use it like crazy. You know, you can just go in, even when you're waiting online, they have people walking around with them and they're holding them up and they're saying, while you're online, if you'd like to look at it and try it out, they're talking about it. They're saying how it works. They're telling, you know, who they have signed up for it. They're being incredibly open about this. So as for the rest of the show, let's see. I mean, this has really been a boring E3. There was nothing that exciting. I mean, like, yeah, there's another Assassin's Creed. There's another, oh, I don't know, Red Faction game. There's some more war games. But you know what? It's like I've seen it all. You know, I'm looking for things that are new and exciting, or at least twists on something. You know, the few games that I did see that were kind of fun, and again, I'm not even taking any notes. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. The new Lara Croft game that's coming out in a few weeks, actually, that game looked great. Actually, if you like Diablo, it was kind of like an action Diablo in a way. It's not Diablo in the sense that you're like shooting things up, but it kind of has that like 2.5D perspective. And it was a fun game. It was actually a lot of fun. You know, it took a little while to get to the controls, but it was a good combination of action, shooting, and puzzling. I liked that one a lot. I actually played that for quite a while, and I'm looking forward to playing that one. And again, something new, something unique. Civilization 5, that's sort of a no-brainer. If you like Civilization, you'll like Civilization 5. I didn't get to see too much of it, but, you know, it's Civilization. It's a, you know, they did get, I actually like they're going to the hex-based system. And, you know, again, they're getting very good at tweaking and refining the whole, you know, Civ experience. So, you know, that's sort of a no-brainer. Another one that surprised me was Dead Rising 2. I played that for probably a good hour. That is also a really good game. The first Dead Rising, I liked the game, but the difficulty level was so insane and so hard. It was such a weird game. I mean, you could tell it was made by a Japanese company because they give you one save file for the entire game because, quote, that's hardcore. No, that's stupid, okay? It's like, yeah, I understand. It's a big thing in Japanese culture to give you, like, one save file or just, like, two because then it makes you, you know, feel more stressful. Like, Hitman used to do that, if you remember, way back when. But it's dumb. It's just, it doesn't make you be anything other than annoyed that you can't have more than one save file. And the other thing with the original Dead Rising is that it was a tough game. It was one section would be really easy, another section would be incredibly hard. And then the most fun part, which was like killing zombies with really weird weapons, the zombies would kill you a little too easily sometimes, so you didn't really get to do the fun stuff. I was talking to the developers. The game has gotten it's a lot easier. It's still challenging. If you're stupid, you will die. And the way they designed the game this time is that, you know, there's a lot more fun. It's a lot more relaxing during the scenes where you're running around killing zombies. But then the boss battles, they said, are very difficult and challenging. And that's the way they balance the game. And that's a good idea. That's the better way to approach it. But there's a lot of fun. There's one of the best things about the game is that you can actually combine. For those of you who don't know what it is, Dead Rising 2, I should probably just tell you, it's that you are stuck in sort of a Las Vegas-esque place and shopping mall, and everyone's a zombie, and you got to get out, you got to rescue people and figure out what's going on, and you only have something like 3 days to do it, and then the army's going to like nuke the whole place. So you have to figure out what's going on and get out of there before you die. And, you know, think about it. You combine zombies with shopping malls and Las Vegas, you got a pretty good game. And sure enough, yeah, it's a lot of fun. The other thing is that everything is a weapon. And when I mean everything, it's like there's a shoe on the ground. That's a weapon. There's a coffee cup on the ground. That's a weapon. There's a tray table over there. That's a weapon. Whatever you see is a weapon. You have a fire extinguisher. That's a weapon. Some of them are really bad weapons. Like you can get a rake and that's a weapon. I got a pair of scissors. That actually was a really good weapon, but you'd only can use it once. But one of the fun things about the game is that you can actually take two weapons and combine them and then turn them into a super weapon. One of the crazy things you could do is that you can take saw blades and a vacuum cleaner. And I tell you, that was the nastiest weapon I've ever seen. It was like, you go around, you could just saw these things in half. Another one is that you could take a paddle, a kayak paddle, and take two chainsaws and put them on the end and duct tape them together. And then you're walking around using this like two-handed chainsaw machete. It's fantastic. Quite a bit of fun. Another one was like the drill-o-matic, is you take a bucket and you take three drills and you put it into the bucket, and then when zombies come up to you, you drop the bucket on its head, and then they like it just makes their head disappear. So, and those get a limited number of uses. Let's just say it's a very violent game, but it was an awful lot of fun, and that comes out in the fall. Let's see, The Witcher 2. That's behind closed doors, but The Witcher 1 I was a big fan of. The Witcher 2 looks really beautiful, really stunningly great game. One thing about The Witcher that I liked quite a bit, it was a very mature game. It actually was, you know, a game for adults as opposed to, you know, I don't know, like I would call the Gears of War, even the Halo games, it's like they're games for adult children is the best way to say it. It's like, yeah, they're games for adults but kids at the same time. So it kind of straddles both lines. While, you know, I would say you would take, I don't know, like The Witcher. The Witcher was a game for adults. It was an adult game with adult topics. It was very raunchy, very broady, you know, had, you know, nudity and sex in it quite a bit. Drugs even, you know, it was a very good game. And, you know, it was made by adults for adults. It was not a kid's game. And this one, now they're much more confident. The game was a huge success overseas, gargantuan monster success, that this new one looks like a much, much better game. That doesn't come out until 2011, unfortunately. Oh, and then, of course, Epic Mickey, which I totally forgot about. Epic Mickey, Warren Spector, is, it's, I mean, that's a pretty good idea. It's like you take Warren Spector, who's making a Deus Ex type game where you can make a, there's a lot of decisions to be made in the game and the characters will react differently to you. And, you know, for those of you who played Deus Ex or Thief or anything by Warren Spector, you know, he's really big into this whole, you get to choose your path. And then the way you choose your path and the way you react to people is the way the game will react back to you. Well, that's in Epic Mickey. And then you can combine platforming, both 3D platforming and 2D platforming, which is really smart, with Mickey Mouse and everything about Mickey Mouse. And actually, I just came back from Disney a little while ago, so I'm still in that Mickey Mouse mode. It's probably going to be a monster hit, unless the game somewhat... Even if the game gets bad reviews, it'll probably still be a monster hit. It hits every spectrum. You know, people who aren't familiar with Warren Spector know Mickey Mouse, and they have a Wii. They'll probably get it. People who know Warren Spector are going to buy it because it's a Warren Spector game, and he hasn't done a game, I think, since 2004. So, you know, there's a ton of Warren Spector fans out there. And then, of course, just people like 2D platforming, which there are a lot of out there, they're going to like this game. Because their 2D platforming is done on these levels that look like, you know, Mickey Mouse cartoons. So it's again, it's really a genius idea. What else was there? Not too much else, I'll be honest with you, that I really found that interesting. I'm thinking about the Sony booth. Pixel Junk Shooter 2, but, you know, Pixel Junk Shooter was a superb game that came out for the PlayStation Network. You know, Pixel Junk Shooter 2, which is sort of the, you know, the same game, just sort of turned into a sequel. That looked really good. The Scott Pilgrim game, that looked great. That actually was a very good looking game. It's basically Double Dragon. It's Double Dragon turned in the Scott Pilgrim universe. Nothing wrong with that. Double Dragon, one of the greatest games of all time. You got a beat 'em up game in a Scott Pilgrim universe that kind of looks like an 8-bit game. Here it is, a Sony PlayStation 3 running games that look like they can run on, you know, your Intellivision. Who would have thought? And that these games actually kick ass. Because, you know, the whole thing is, this is about the HD era, because you can see how that is. I wanted to like the Sly Cooper game, but to be honest, here's a good idea of what I heard. I was playing the game, and then the guy next to me said, wow, considering how awful, or I don't remember the exact word he said, but considering how crazy, I think it was, said, the 3D looked, when you put on the glasses, it's not that 3D. And I knew exactly what he meant. It's like when you look at it, the TV, it looks like it's the most crazy amount of 3D you've ever seen in your life. You put on the glasses and it didn't really look 3D at all. So I don't know what the heck was going on there. Mafia 2, but then again, Take Two, Rockstar. I loved the first Mafia game. So, you know, anything by those guys, I'll be pretty excited to play. So really, you know, the thing about this E3 is this might be the first E3 I can think of that I didn't really see anything that surprised me. You know, every single time you go to these E3s, they always have a lot of cool games by, like, big and small companies that, you know, and you see something you just didn't expect to see. You know, last year, a lot of people were talking about Scribblenauts quite a bit. A lot of people were talking about Torchlight, you know, that kind of came out of nowhere. You know, every year there's something like that. And I just have not seen a single thing that either I kind of knew about ahead of time or, I don't know, that just kind of came out of nowhere. That, you know, it was like something you heard about but didn't really know that much about, and then you saw it and it was really exciting. You know, just not really seeing anything. And yeah, there's definitely some cool announcements. Again, a lot of the Nintendo stuff was completely unknown. Like, I didn't know there was going to be a new Donkey Kong Country. No one did until today. So that was exciting. But at the same time, in a weird way, how would I say? It's like I kind of knew. So this is Nintendo's MO. Nintendo doesn't tell you anything, so you know everything that they're going to show you is kind of cool and new. So, you know, it's like there's just nothing really that's like grabbing me. As that's like, it's fun, it's exciting, it's something that kind of came out of left field, and that's something that's, you know, making me really excited to play. You know, even last year, Pixel Junk Shooter, that came out of nowhere. That's turned out to be a great game. So, you know, I'll go to the show again tomorrow. Hopefully there'll be something pretty cool there that I'll, you know, grab my attention that I haven't seen yet. But, you know, so far this has been kind of an average show. And if not, I'd say one of the more disappointing ones, which is really strange because I thought last year's show was really great. The one in was the 2007, I think, actually was the best show of all time. And, you know, the ones in like 2006 and all the other ones, it just felt like you'd go to these shows and there was just, I mean, it was crazy. It was just like, you know, you'd go and there was a ridiculous amount. The Booth Babes were like totally over the top. You know, they had Mutator playing like in crazy, you know, rock and roll. They'd have guys on skateboards. They'd have BMX bikers, all that nutsoid stuff. Here, it's like the booths are kind of this, a lot of these guys have the same booths from last year. Sony keeps recycling their booth. Nintendo kind of keeps their booth, but at least they redo the layout every single year. Activision didn't even show up, and Activision almost always has a really good booth. The Microsoft booth, they redo their booth every year, but this booth year, the booth kind of stinks because Kinect, they have these Kinect rooms, and they're enormous. They're taking up so much space on the booth. It's ridiculous. The Ubisoft booth is the same as before. The EA booth is showing games that I really don't care about. Oh, The Sims, I mean, but The Sims is like, again, it's almost gotten to the point, it's like, it doesn't excite me to see a new Sims game, because I know there's going to be new Sims content. As sure as it's going to rain, is going to be new Sims content. That's what EA does now. They milk everything that's worth, you know, that they have. You know, so, again, you know, this has been really, the only thing that kind of was kind of cool is the Capcom booth. Or is it not Capcom? It's a Capcom. The Capcom booth is the, you know, where Dead Rising is. They have people dressed up as zombies and they're like in cages. And then they have a guy where you could take a picture on a bike with two chainsaws attached to it. And the guy who's like the carnival barker is actually really good. That's the old E3 that I used to know and love. And that's the only thing that's really in E3. Katana Hall's gone. Like, you know, that was also something awesome about E3, is like the crazy stuff you'd see at Katana Hall. They don't have that anymore. And also, you know, I think it's gotten a little less kind of, I don't know, out there. Like in the old days, you know, you go to E3 and unless you were here, that was the only way you'd see the stuff. Now, you know, and the press conferences, forget about the press conferences. Unless you're invited, you got to read about the press conferences secondhand later. And then maybe you'd see some pictures. Then a few years ago, you'd see videos. Now you're watching the press conferences live. I was on TV, for God's sakes. You could watch it on Spike or G4. And they're showing them the exact same time that you're seeing it. And to be honest, you get a better seat than most of the people at the conference themselves. So, you know, it's just a very different era. You know, you can go to Comic-Con, you can go to Gen Con, you can go to PAX, and they show the same stuff there. Trust me, if you go to Comic-Con next month, the games they're showing there are going to be the same games that they're showing this year. And even last year, they had like the Bayonetta girl, who was really cool, and she was just like, just her outfit alone was amazing, and she was generating a lot of buzz. It's just, I don't see like there's that much buzz. And I've been talking to other people, and they're feeling the same way. And I was reading Jeff Green's, you know, Twitter, and he felt like he kind of felt about this one. I'm talking to people, they all feel that kind of way right now. I haven't been checking out too many other blogs tonight, so I'm curious to see what they have to say. And then, you know, in general, and this is, I'm going to close up the segment with this, is that I was talking to some friends of mine. I was talking to a friend of mine in Activision who's been there for, I think, like 12 years now. And I asked him, and of course, it's all off the record, you know, what are they doing right now? How do they feel? And this guy's pretty high up. He's been there for a long time. And he said right now, it's like they feel scared and sort of aimless, because they do not know where gaming is going. And in a weird way, I almost feel like that's what's happening now. The only one that seems to have a true grasp of what's going to be going forward is a few developers and Nintendo. And everyone else seems to be kind of floundering. And even Activision, my friend, he said, I'll summarize what he said, is that, you know, you can't really develop for the Wii, because the only one who really has, and their idea of huge success is like millions of copies sold. You know, if a game sells a million copies, they really are kind of happy. They want a game to sell 5 million plus copies. They want a game to really be a big success. So they're thinking, you know, like the Wii, the only games that are big successes on the Wii are Nintendo games. So they can come out with Wii games, but they're super cheap. So they'll continuously come out with Wii games, but they're not going to be monsters. You're not going to be Call of Duty monsters. They're not going to be World of Warcraft monsters. They're just not. You know, they can come out with DS games, and the DS games, they're very, very cheap to make, but, you know, even monster hits, they make money, but they don't make Call of Duty money. So that's, they're not sure how to do that. You have the Xbox and the PlayStation 3, and yeah, the problem with those is that they're extremely expensive to develop for, and the market share just isn't there like they wanted it to be. It's not the PlayStation 2 levels. The game that had the, you know, the console is the PlayStation 2 levels is the Wii. And the Wii, as I said from the beginning, they can't really develop on and come up with these monster games. It's just not happening. And so they have nowhere to develop games on. They don't know where to do it. And then, to make matters worse, you have Facebook games where you have something like, I don't know, Farmville, which takes 6 weeks to develop using MS SQL, and Flash. And it's ripped off from a Chinese game, by the way. And they do it in a couple of weeks, and it is now like one of the most successful games on the planet. And I know a lot of people hate it, and they don't consider it a real game. But trust me, every single person in the video game industry and everyone in, you know, the marketing industry considers those very real games. Okay, you go to 7-Eleven and you see, you know, Facebook all over the place, and you see Mob Wars. You know, they're not doing that because it's fun. They're doing this because it's becoming a brand. Okay, these are real games. Even though, yeah, they're mostly sliders and just like things you do where you repeat over and over again. But I hate to break it to you, World of Warcraft is really nothing more in many ways than a slot machine generator where you just keep pulling levers and you keep killing monsters and you're getting loot over and over again. And you just do that a couple thousand times. That's what most MMOs are. And you know what? People love it. So, and that is really kind of what those games are. And guess what? People love it. So yeah, it's not Call of Duty and it's not Halo and it's not even Super Mario Brothers, but they like it. And if people like it, then it sells and it does well, and people pay attention to that, and people with money and power pay attention to that. So right now, a lot of people in the video game world don't know exactly what to do because they're trying desperately. In the old days, they would just come out with something on PlayStation 2 and they would do really well and everyone would be happy. Or they would come out with something on the PlayStation and they would come out and they'd be very happy. Now, they have nowhere to really put the games out. They can't come out on PC either, because if they try to come out on a PC, they get pirated like crazy, and they're trying to, they have no idea how to fight that. So that's a whole other subject. So right now, the only one that seems to kind of doing okay is you have Ubisoft, which did really amazing job with Assassin's Creed, and they come out with that on every single platform. So now they just try to find, you know, brands, and then they just take that brand and they just spread it on every single platform known to mankind and just try to make as much money in as many ways possible. And, you know, when you have Madden, which is like the biggest bankable thing of all time, and even that's starting to flounder, you have a lot of nervous executives and a lot of nervous game developers out there. And I mean a lot. And that's really what I've been hearing, except for, I don't know, my friends at Blizzard, who are secure in their job for the next 20 years because they already have a game plan of everything they're doing for at least the next 10 years. I actually know their whole game plan for the next 10 years of every game they're coming out with, and all their plans. And Cataclysm is going to be coming out easily. Actually, it's like way ahead of schedule. It's doing really well. And, you know, that's really where we're at. I'd say this is sort of like a transitional E3 where everyone's trying to figure out who's going to be where in the next few years. And I tell you, though, after I saw the Nintendo 3DS, I'm very curious to see next year to see what they do, because it's not like you can come out with an Xbox 360 and make a 3D because it's, you know, it's part of a TV set. It's like Sony. They're going to try to, what, sell you a $700 PS4 and a $2,000 3D TV, it ain't going to cut it. You know, they have to make these things cheaper. I don't know. I have a feeling this next few years are going to be kind of brutal. Well, with that being said, I hope you enjoyed the return of Gaming Steve, and I wasn't too rambling. I have a feeling that was a pretty rambling episode because I haven't done this in about 2.5 years. But if I continue to do it, I promise I'll get a little bit better and get a little more focused and maybe actually read from notes like I used to. And then this would be, actually have a whole point to it. But there's probably a couple of gems of wisdom in there. But if you have some questions or comments, feel free to write to me at steve@gamingsteve.com. In the old days, if you send me audio, I guess you could send video. If you send audio, I would play it and answer your questions on the air. I'd be happy to do that. I can talk about a whole bunch of cool things like, the guys in Infinity Ward, I actually know exactly what happened. I have tons of inside dirt on that from friends right at the scene, guys who actually work there, both in Infinity Ward and Activision. I have both sides of the story, and I have no idea who's telling the truth, but it's really, really interesting. And some of the stuff that no one's talking about. I could talk about how game journalism is not game journalism whatsoever. All they are is PR cheerleaders, and all they do is say exactly what the PR companies tell you to say, and if you don't say exactly what they tell you to say, then you're blackballed forever, which is one of the reasons why I kind of stopped doing this, is because I couldn't take that anymore. I could talk about how Nintendo is doing an amazing job of starting to go around all game journalists, and this is one of the reasons why everyone hates them, and they're doing their own interview segments and doing their own PR, and it's really quite genius, and you can see it on their website. I can talk about, a few other fun subjects about how, the game developers are all getting ripped off and being treated like slave labor out here. One of the fun things. Well, you get an idea. I can talk about all these cool topics that no one else is talking about because 99% of the people in this game industry are not journalists whatsoever. They're just people regurgitating the press releases and information the game companies want you to know about, and they do no journalism whatsoever, which is actually digging around, talking to inside sources, and talking about stuff that you don't want to hear about, you want to hear about that they don't want you to hear about, and they being the game companies. That's real journalism. Anyhow, hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll talk to you guys later. See ya.
Listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, viva la dance revolution!